This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Monday, April 14th, I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, Amy Guida has this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News, and we'll have a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana. But first, today's news. Four schools near Chicago College are canceling classes after a threat was found scrawled on a bathroom wall at the university. Other McCauley High School, Brother Rice High School, Queen of Martyrs High School, and Evergreen Park Southwest Elementary were closed today because of their proximity to St. Xavier University. That school shut down indefinitely last week after threatening graffiti was found scrawled in the bathroom of a freshman dorm. One message read, quote, "Be prepared to die on 414. Officials hope the Catholic Liberal Arts College will open as soon as possible. Meanwhile, officials at the area high schools and elementary schools say they expect to resume classes tomorrow. A top Illinois education official says state lawmakers ought to be doing more about the violence that's killed 23 Chicago public school students since fall. Chip Mitchell has more.
The Illinois House shot down an attempt to limit handgun purchases last week, but State Board of Education Chairman Jesse Ruiz has something else in mind. He wants what he calls wraparound education services in Chicago.
I'd love to see every school in the district have all the resources to keep a child occupied from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
That means programs before and after school.
That will not only keep them hopefully out of harm's way, but also help close the achievement gap.
A bill sponsored by Senate President Emil Jones would increase funding for schools while shifting the burden from property taxes to the state income tax. Last week, House leaders tried to raise money for education. Their plan would have doubled the income tax for people who make more than $250,000 a year. Republicans helped defeat the bill. They called it an election year stunt. I'm Chip Mitchell.
Stuart Levine is scheduled to respond to more questions from Tony Rezko's defense attorneys this morning. Robert Wildebor has that story.
Levine's already spent 3 weeks on the stand in Tony Rezko's trial. When he answers questions, he leans into the microphone on the witness stand and says, "Yes, sir," and "No, sir." Defense attorney Joe Duffy also calls Levine sir, but despite the pleasantries, it seems there's no love lost between the two. In an attempt to discredit the government's main witness, Duffy has repeatedly asked Levine about his decades of drug use and 24-hour parties he had at hotels. But jurors won't have to rely solely on Levine's testimony. The government had tapped Levine's phones, and they have Rezko on tape establishing the fact that Rezko and Levine at least had a relationship. And they'll call other witnesses who will presumably prop up Levine's testimony that that relationship involved corruption. I'm Robert Wildebor.
Earlier this year, an elementary teacher admitted he sexually abused 8 students at an Urbana school. That teacher recently was sentenced to prison time. The school had hired the teacher without any knowledge he'd been let go from a school in Normal after allegations of misconduct surfaced. Amanda Vinicky reports on how that situation has spurred the General Assembly.
Representative Dan Brady, a Republican from Bloomington, says it seems like it would be common sense. If a school had suspicions a teacher had inappropriate contact with students, the school would discourage other districts from hiring that teacher. But Brady says often schools don't share that information out of fear they'll be sued.
They feel that in some ways they may be trapped and that they have to try and protect individuals' rights. On the other hand, we're talking about trying to protect our children. And I think protecting our children outweighs anything else when it comes to sharing of information.
Brady is trying to reverse that situation. A measure approved by the Illinois House requires schools to share suspicions of teacher misconduct with other districts seeking to hire that teacher. School superintendents would have legal protection, but they could face legal penalties for keeping the information private. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
A published report says uniforms belonging to U.S. Transportation Security Administration officers were left out in the open at an O'Hare Airport checkpoint last month. So were sensitive security information and a cash box. The report in today's Chicago Sun-Times says no security was breached, but an aviation security expert said uniforms could be stolen and used by people trying to get through security without being checked. A TSA spokesman said someone in a TSA uniform couldn't get into a secure area without the proper identification, But a former inspector general of the U.S. Department of Transportation said TSA officers in uniform are routinely waved through some security checkpoints. Illinois highway authorities are installing new security cameras and emergency phones at rest areas around the state. Officials say the upgrades will give motorists an extra measure of security. The cameras will offer surveillance of rest stop facilities and parking lots. The emergency phones will be programmed to dial the nearest Illinois State Police office. The Department of Transportation has set aside $450,000 for the initial upgrades. The total cost of the project should be around $1.2 million. Work is currently underway at two test sites. Installations at 52 rest areas should be done by the middle of summer. A new exhibit at the Indiana Historical Society allows visitors to experience a World War II-era grocery store, complete with ration books and discussions of wartime events. Designers and collectors for the Society spent months studying old photographs and searching antique stores and internet sites for items that would help replicate an Indiana neighborhood grocery store. Inside the recreated market, strip steak is 49 cents per pound, and a box of Wheaties costs a dime. Interpreters at the site act as the store's employees and customers. The exhibit in Indianapolis opens this week. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bosser. After the raid on the polygamist ranch in Texas, we all learned that the minimum age for marriage in Texas is 16. Police allege that a 16-year-old's call to them about an earlier so-called marriage helped spark the raid. But it wasn't always that way. Commentator Amy Guida explains in this week's Legal Issues in the News that laws regarding minimum marrying age are surprisingly fluid even today.
The pictures of the long-haired young girls wearing long cotton dresses, leaving Warren Jeffs yearn for Zion Ranch in Texas, made me both angry and disgusted with the adults in their lives. All polygamist concerns aside, these girls are not of marrying age. But what exactly is marrying age? That answer has varied considerably over the years, and perhaps not coincidentally, changed as recently as 3 years ago in Texas, where the polygamist ranch is located. It's a legal question because state statutes provide the requirements for a valid marriage. Typically, they require that the intended have a marriage license and a ceremony of some kind, and that the couple be of different genders, not be closely related, and be of a certain age. Laws against so-called plural marriage are universal and rock solid in this country. In contrast, laws setting the minimum age for marriage have been much more fluid. The plural marriages of young teenaged girls might be illegal everywhere as polygamous, but whether their young age posed a second barrier is a surprisingly close and current legal question. The Supreme Court surveyed all 50 states 3 years ago and found that the standard legally permissible marrying age was 18. But most states allow 16 or 17-year-olds to marry if they have their parents' permission. In a few states, the requirement of parental consent is waived if the underage girl is pregnant. And in some states, a teenager who is less than 16 can marry as long as he or she has both parental and court permission. The only state that's markedly different is Mississippi. There, even without parental permission and even without pregnancy, girls can marry at age 15 and boys at age 17, a gender distinction that's both traditional and almost certainly unconstitutional. The requirement that younger teenagers get their parents' consent is supposed to protect children from puppy love marriages. But of course, in some settings, a requirement of parental consent is no safeguard at all. At the ranch in Texas, authorities allege that children were carried away to marriage not by their own impulsiveness, but by their parents and elders. So state legislatures have enacted minimum ages for marriage that even approving parents can't get around. In Texas, for example, the legislature amended its law in 2005 to make it a felony offense for a parent to consent to the marriage of a child below the age of 16. That means that in Texas, as in Illinois, any marriage of a 15-year-old is legally invalid. But just 3 years ago, the minimum marrying age in Texas was 14. Kansas amended its law in 2006 to set the minimum age for marriage at 15 with a judge's approval after a 14-year-old girl's marriage cast an embarrassing national spotlight on the state's prior law, which allowed boys to marry at age 14 and girls to marry at age 12. And we shouldn't get too smug about other states. An Illinois court explained in the 1950s that at common law in the days before marriage statutes, and here I quote, "an attempt of an infant under 7 years of age to contract in marriage was without legal significance, but the marriage of an infant over 7 years of age, but below the legal consent, was not absolutely void, but was a voidable marriage, meaning that it used to be that the marriage of an 8-year-old was valid unless someone intervened to object. That's far younger than any state would allow today, of course, but in some places, marriage for a young teenager is still possible. In recent years, human rights activists around the globe have made a major push to recognize child marriage as a violation of human rights. But human rights must also begin at home. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. In the forecast for East Central Illinois, today mostly sunny, the high around 50. Tonight mostly clear, the low around 30 degrees. Sunny skies tomorrow, not as cool, the high around 62 degrees, breezy, with gusts of 30 miles per hour in the afternoon. Not as cool tomorrow night, mostly clear, the low around 42. Windy and sunny Wednesday, the high around 70, and partly cloudy with a low around 48 degrees on Wednesday night and Thursday, with a high around 72. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Monday, April 14th, you can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.